I'm your host, Stephanie Miller, and you're listening to the Killer Kind Podcast. I hope everyone had a fun and safe Labor Day weekend. We made a few last-minute plans, so I had a good weekend with my family. Real quick, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who bought some of our stickers. I was excited to finally have something you guys could get your hands on. And if you haven't bought one yet, you can head over to the podcast Instagram or Facebook page and send me a DM or just comment anywhere saying, hey, I want a sticker, and I'll be sure to get you one. One more thing, I am working on a link tree for the show, which basically is just links to anything that you might be interested in or anything that I would like to share with you guys. Hopefully that is up by the time this episode goes live. I'm going to work on that for you. But if not, check out the show notes as always, and you can find any and all information or links to things there. I do have an affiliate link for you guys that you might be interested in. If you are looking for a new phone case, I recently purchased a phone case for myself from Wally Cases, and after my purchase, I received a link to sign up as an affiliate. So all that basically means for you is that if you use my code, you get $5 off an order. Not sure how long the code's going to last, but if you're in the market for a new phone case, or they even have like Apple Watch bands and a few different phone accessories, they do have a couple of masculine cases as well for my guys, but most are cute, girly designs, to be honest. But if you're interested, check out Wally Cases. That's W-A-L-L-I. And be sure to use my code for $5 off. I got my case in the mail just the other day, and I've been loving it. Like I said, I'll be sure to include my code and my link to their website in the show notes for today's episode so you can check it out there, or hopefully the link tree is up and you'll be able to check the links there. Now, moving on, let's get into today's episode. I hate to break it to those that don't love my unsolved cases just because they're so frustrating, but I've got another mystery in store for you guys today. This is one of those cases that's going to be honest, it's going to piss you off by the end of it, and one that leaves you scratching your head a little bit too. But as always, I think it's an important story to share. Today we're going to be talking about a suspicious death of an 18-year-old who was reported missing for 7 years. But when his body was found just 2 blocks away from his family home, everyone was horrified by what they found, and it only left the family with more questions than answers. So without further ado, let's dive into this suspicious death of Joshua Maddox. Joshua Vernon Maddox, better known as Josh, was born on March 9th, 1990 in Woodland Park, Colorado, which is about an hour and a half south of Denver. Josh was born to his parents, Mike and Roberta Maddox, and Josh was the 4th-born child to the Maddox family. He had an older brother, Zachary, and 2 older sisters, Catherine and Ruth. They all grew up in Woodland Park, which had a population of around 7,000 people. It was a quaint Colorado city in Teller County, home to the picturesque Pike National Forest. I couldn't find much on Josh's childhood or too much about his family life, but I do know that his parents sadly divorced sometime before he turned 16 years old. From what I understand, Josh went to live with his dad, and so did his 2 older sisters. I'm sure it had an impact on all 4 of the siblings. However, Josh was only ever described as a carefree kid who loved music. He loved writing and playing his guitar. Josh was also very smart. His sister Kate said her brother's IQ was off the charts, but he was very outgoing and fun to be around. From what I've read about Josh, he was definitely a jokester. He brought a briefcase to school instead of a backpack one time. He was known to jump in the middle of the school president debate and announce himself as a candidate. Then there was a time that he snuck into the school choir wearing a robe. Kate said that Josh was known as that, quote, awesome kid who would wear a top hat and carry a briefcase. He had an interesting sense of style. She said there was a subtle sophistication about him that made him interesting and a standout. Ruth had nothing but good things to say about Josh as well, much like everyone that knew him. In a statement given to the local Pikes Peak Courier, Ruth said, "He was my best friend, and he always inspired me to strive for greatness. Josh could tell me that one should never say anything bad about anyone else ever, and I tried to be more like him every day. Josh was one of the nicest people I'd ever met, and I'm proud to be his sister." Ruth said that Josh was intelligent and creative. She said that he'd even try to draw his own comic series called Stickman and Smiley. She said that Josh had a real talent for creative writing as well. Josh loved to read and was a brilliant writer. Josh was a wonderful person with a bright light that enriched the lives of everyone around him. Tragedy struck on June 1st, 2006, when his older brother, Zachary, committed suicide. Zachary was 18 years old and just 1 week away from high school graduation when this happened. It was known that Zachary did suffer from depression, and the family was still devastated. Josh looked up to his older brother and loved him very much, so his death took a toll on the 16-year-old. After a short time, Josh was able to slowly get back to his happy, carefree self. He would always grieve for his brother, but despite his death, he had been doing well and seemed happy in the period around 2008, where our case takes place today. Now, first, I want to mention that after his brother's death, Josh did seem to have a new lease on life. He started enjoying more time outdoors. He definitely became more quiet and reserved. His friends and family were a little worried about him. It was one of those things where his family believed he wasn't really showing how hard his brother's death was on him. Like maybe he was acting happier on the outside than how he felt on the inside. On Thursday, May 8th, 2008, Josh tells his sister, Kate, that he was going out for a walk. This was something that he had done many times before. Woodland Park had wooded areas known for their hiking trails. And at this point in his life, now 18 years old, he loved hiking and just being out in nature. His sister Ruth said he had been loving all things outdoors, including hiking, fishing, and even camping with friends. So when he told his sister he was going out for a walk, she thought absolutely nothing of it. However, when Josh didn't come home that night, his family was only slightly worried. His dad said, quote, "I got up one morning and Josh was there. Then he just never came home." The following day, when his son still hadn't returned, he decided to start calling some of Josh's friends. And to his surprise, nobody had seen or heard from the 18-year-old. It wasn't until May 13th, 5 days after Josh left, that the family called to report him missing. Now, this obviously caused some backlash for the family. And I will say, Josh's dad and two sisters have spoken out about this sort of grand adventure that Josh had always talked about. His sister Kate said that Josh had hinted at running away before. She said he had always told them that he was going to have a great adventure and he may not talk to us for a while. She said when he said a while, they always thought maybe a few years. Kate and Ruth both said they didn't think much about Josh being gone because they kept thinking that he's 18 now. Maybe he finally decided to take off on this adventure that he wanted to go on. However, their father was definitely a little more frantic. After it took a few days to contact all of Josh's friends, he didn't know what else to do. So he does end up calling the police. He said he felt like he had given Josh more than enough time to return home on his own. So it sounds like any kind of foul play was the last thing on Mike's mind. He trusted his son, but he wanted to make sure he was safe. And when there was no way to confirm that, he called the police. Now, you know where this is going to go, right? We have an 18-year-old that left his home on his own free will. So when Mike called the police, they were quick to say that Josh may have just run away. Since he was an adult and there was no sign of foul play, there wasn't much they could do. However, they did make a missing persons report along with distinguishing features Josh had and how he was missing the tip of his right index finger, which he had lost in a bicycle accident when he was young. The police were also told that Josh was likely still grieving the death of his brother, Zachary. So, in the missing persons report, they noted that Josh may be in mental distress, but the police still said they weren't really able to do anything besides put out the report. They said because Josh was of legal age to leave and there was no signs of a crime here, they weren't able to search for him. So that left the family to search by themselves. The family, friends, and neighbors all helped search for Josh. They searched nearby wooded areas, neighborhoods, and anywhere they thought Josh might be. But there was no sign of him. The weeks turned into months, and the months turned into years with no sign of Josh. His father never gave up hope. He continued to search nearby campgrounds and even homeless shelters in Colorado Springs for years, and he always kept an eye out when he was in a large crowd. He hoped that Josh had maybe run away, but considered the possibility that Josh might have committed suicide just like his brother, although he was not set on that theory. In a comment to the Pikes Peak Courier, Mike says about Zachary, "It's tough as a parent. You try to raise your kids when they get close to 18. You think maybe they're pretty much grown up, but they're not. They still need a lot of help." I think this is what led him to take Josh's disappearance so seriously. I think a part of him wanted to believe his son just went off and started a new life, just like his sisters did, which we'll get into in a second. But knowing that Zachary needed help and nobody was able to help him, I think with Josh, he wanted to do everything he could to help his son, but also try to remember that he is 18 and he was a smart kid. Mike said that after Josh's disappearance, he stayed in their family home just in case Josh decided to come back. He'd be there when he did. Mike said in an interview, "I pray for him every single day. If he's in heaven, I pray that he's at peace. If he's here on earth somewhere, I pray he's okay. The pain is so great, but I want people to remember Josh." And that sentence alone is just heartbreaking as a parent. I can't even imagine. Now, as I mentioned, his sisters really believed Josh would come back one day. Kate remained hopeful despite the time passing. She wrote an article in the Woodland Park News that talked about the great adventure Josh told his family he had planned to go on. She said he may have decided to leave town to start a new life. She said, "As one of his two sisters, I have always chosen to believe that this was the case. I have accepted the fact that Josh may have went off to start a new life and start a new family." She said, "I expected Josh to return home to my father's house at any time with a wife and small children so they could meet their grandparents and two aunts. Josh has always been known for his musical and literary talent, so maybe he would find him playing music in a band on tour or catch him writing successful novels under a pen name so that he could keep his preferred lifestyle of solitude, maybe out in the woods." Kate told the Huffington Post that, "We had hope of him being alive, and I feel like in a sense he continued to live on with us because we had so many dreams of what he could possibly be doing." Though the family tried to remain hopeful, anytime there was a body in or around Woodland Park, the media and Josh's family braced themselves for the worst. Mike said for a long time, every time the phone rang, he would expect it to be the morgue or police. He said one time they found a body in New Mexico and thought it might be him. He said, "You just play this waiting game constantly." It would be 7 long years before the family would get any sort of answer as to what happened to Josh. In August 2015, a construction crew began demolishing a cabin outside of the old Thunderhead Ranch property, less than a mile from the Maddox family home. The cabin had been pretty much abandoned, although the main property had been restored at one point. The cabin itself had been converted into a rental property where the owner's brother lived up until about 2005. The cabin was basically used as a storage facility for a while and ultimately abandoned. It obviously attracted various wild animals and wildlife and ultimately started to decay over time. So on August 7th, Chuck Murphy, the owner of the cabin and the property that it sat on, decided he wanted to demolish the old cabin, and he made plans for a neighborhood development. The cabin sat on a large patch of land. It was about 50 feet from the road and surrounded by tall pine trees. Since it hadn't been used in over 10 years, it was in pretty bad shape at this point. Chuck would later tell the Sun Gazette that occasionally we'd go down and check on the cabin and, you know, there would always be mice and chipmunks and raccoons. He said it always smelled pretty bad. But besides that, everything seemed pretty normal. Ultimately, Chuck made the decision to tear it down and he had a plan to build the new neighborhood. When the construction crew entered the cabin, the plan was to dismantle the two chimneys in the cabin. However, when they were dismantling one of the chimneys, Chuck Murphy and the crew made a gruesome discovery. Murphy found a mummified body inside the cabin. Fair warning, the state the body was in is horrible, to say the least. But again, I think it's important to explain just how the body was found. When they reached the fireplace, they moved a large breakfast bar table out of the way, and that's when they made the gruesome discovery. Chuck Murphy said the body was lodged inside the chimney. The knees were above the head, but the legs were dislodged. Chuck said that the body was found only wearing a sweater, which was later determined to be a long-sleeve ribbed thermal shirt. He went on to say that the body was partially mummified, but the legs had been skeletonized. The body was upside down in the fetal position and had a hand covering its face. Chuck said that though they had already started moving some of the heavy machinery to tear apart the cabin from the outside, there's a chance the body was found in a position that maybe it wasn't originally in before the construction started, if that makes sense. Chuck immediately contacted police about the discovery. The Maddox family heard the news and painfully waited to see if this was their son, just like they had done every time a body was found. It took weeks before the body was formally identified through dental records as that of Joshua Maddox. The coroner ultimately ruled his death as accidental. The coroner mentioned a few possibilities as to what led to his death in a brief summary. He said it couldn't have been starvation because that would have taken several weeks. He said it was either dehydration or hypothermia, whichever one, you know, kind of got to him first. The coroner theorized that Josh tried to break into the cabin by climbing down into the chimney. However, upon climbing in, he realized that the table or piece of furniture was blocking the chimney, and he was unable to get all the way through and ultimately got stuck. Therefore, the case was ruled an accidental death on the victim's behalf. Case closed, right? You would think that. You know there's more to it. But before that, I'll say that the fact that the cabin was really just a few blocks away from the Maddox family home was deeply upsetting to them. Kate told the Huffington Post that one of the most traumatic things about this story is that the cabin he was found in is literally two blocks away from my dad's house. We looked through every part of those woods. We thought he could walk to, but the cabin never came up. Kate and the rest of Josh's family really could not figure out why he would have even been visiting the cabin in the first place. Kate went on to say that this isn't how we wanted him to come home, but he has come home, and that's important. Now, the coroner himself, Al Bourne, became sort of the face of the investigation. The news formally broke on September 29th, 2015, that the remains belonged to Joshua Maddox. That same day, Al spoke with the media to share his findings and announce his death was determined to be accidental. He stated that although Josh suffered a, quote, horrible death, it was not a homicide, and that there was no indication of trauma, specifically no broken bones, no knife wounds, no indication at all that he was murdered. I don't know about anybody else here, but I don't really like this coroner guy, and you'll see why. He has just made some very distasteful comments regarding Josh's death, making comments that I'm sure he would that I'm sure would offend or sadden the family even further. He made a comment about how Josh was very tall and skinny, which he was, and was probably shimmying down the chimney, quote, Santa Claus style, to get in. That makes me angry. To the Huffington Post, he gave a combination of oddly detailed but speculative statements about Josh's death, some of which I've already mentioned, and about how he believed Josh could have died, either dehydration or hypothermia. He made the comment about how Josh would have been yelling out for help, but that nobody would have heard him because houses were quite a distance away. To me, he is just, it's just a little too comfortable talking about Josh's death. I mean, I know death is a part of his everyday job, but to me, and I'm sure to many people, he was just kind of enjoying the spotlight, it sounds like. I mean, if you know what I mean, like, it's like, shut up. It's like, stop talking. You've got like word vomit and you're saying things that are so just out of line. Like, just spit the facts, leave it at that. Quit with your opinion, quit with your Santa Claus comments. Like, oh, this guy makes me angry. I've dealt with some coroners in my day and other podcasts that I listen to. Maybe I'll make comments about that in the future. I feel like I've made a comment about one, but just in case I haven't, I won't go off on that tyrant. But anyways, so I just don't think it's any of his business either talking to the media. Now, I will say that I did find out that he was kind of the face because this case, Josh's case, kind of happened in two different jurisdictions. So like the disappearance and the missing persons report was handled in one jurisdiction. And then when it became, you know, a death and we have the body, that was handled under a different jurisdiction. So, but he was the coroner for both. So that's kind of why he's the face. There are other officers and things like that that have come forward and made a few comments, but none like this guy. So anyways, he did express his condolences in his own way at one point, saying, quote, I can't imagine the pain that family went through. There was 7 years before they could get closure. That interim had to be brutal. The cabin was ultimately demolished on September 30th, just 2 days after Josh's remains were positively identified. The coroner said the death investigation had been fully completed before the demolition crew was given the clear to finish the job. Exactly how long the death investigation went on for and the exact details of the autopsy were never made public. Now, let's get into some sketchy facts, to say the least, and issues myself and many people have with this case and how we don't believe this was just an. Supposedly, there was some rebar at the top of the chimney. Chuck Murphy himself, the owner of the cabin, said it would be impossible for anyone to slide down the chimney because, quote, heavy steel mesh had been installed near the top of the chimney, kind of like a grate, when it was built back in about 25 years ago. He said it was installed to try and keep wild animals out. The coroner contradicted this by alleging that no rebar was found at the crime scene. However, Chuck said it was already a construction zone when they found the body. The rebar had already been dismantled and removed as part of the demolition. He said that they were collecting all of the metal scraps and things like that during the process. So, although it wasn't there when police and the coroner arrived, nor was it present in any of the crime scene photographs, it was there the day they started demoing the place. Therefore, if that rebar was in the way, it rules out the fact that that's how Josh got in the chimney in the first place. I mean, yes, the way his body was found, the way it was positioned, if he had climbed in the chimney on his own, it does kind of line up with him going down into the chimney head first. Like, to me, that only makes sense that that's how he ended up in that position, from the outside of the house going down into the chimney head first, if that makes sense. Now, I was listening to Dr. Todd Grande on YouTube, and he made a brief point that Chuck Murphy could have been hit with a lawsuit since there was a death on his poorly maintained property. So he could have been insisting that the wire mesh was still there to rule out Josh crawling in on his own. So do keep that in mind. I don't really believe that necessarily, but I think it's something to keep in mind and kind of a good point. So with that said, that Chuck's theory and involvement could be because he's trying to avoid something like a lawsuit, you know, and it makes sense to me, but again, I don't fully believe it, but it's a good point to make. Another thing that doesn't make sense about this case is the fact that there was a large breakfast bar blocking the chimney from inside the cabin. The bar was attached to the wall, so it had to have been ripped off the wall in the kitchen and dragged across the floor. Chuck has stated that he doesn't know when the breakfast bar was moved, if it could have been like that before Josh's disappearance or not. Then there was the fact that Josh was only wearing a long sleeve shirt. And you might be wondering where the rest of his clothes were. Well, this is going to blow your mind, and it kind of blows the whole case wide open. The rest of Josh's clothes were found inside the cabin, folded up and placed neatly next to the fireplace. So to me, this completely destroys the coroner's theory as to what happened. He said that Josh climbed into the chimney in order to gain access into the cabin. The breakfast bar was blocking the entry to the fireplace, so Josh got stuck and wasn't able to get back out, meaning he did not make it all the way through the fireplace like he wanted to, ultimately leading to his death. But now that we know his clothes were inside the cabin, you have to think that if Josh acted alone, he would have gotten into the cabin somehow. He would have supposedly ripped off the breakfast bar and drug it over to block the fireplace. Then he would have taken off everything from the waist down, gone back outside, climbed up on the roof of the cabin, possibly taking the mesh rebar off, if that was possible, climbing into the chimney, possibly putting the mesh rebar back by himself, turning upside down, and trying to descend head first, and ultimately getting stuck. I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense. That makes absolutely zero sense to anyone. The coroner does ultimately change his initial ruling to cause of death being accidental. He turns it to possibly accidental death, murder, or undetermined causes. However, he added, quote, "We've come up with the most plausible explanation, and it will remain an accident. He did come down the chimney. That's our conclusion." So all that sounds like is he's not willing to change his official ruling to anything other than accidental, but now that he was kind of caught with his tail between his legs, with his explanation of Josh's death not making any sense whatsoever, it sounds like he opened the door to other possibilities, but was still trying to stand firm and like kind of cocky, in my opinion, like what I said was right. without saying. It's very, very strange. Now, when the news broke about Josh's death, it shocked the Woodland Park area, and stories about his death sprouted all over community Facebook pages and all social media. Rumors that Josh was killed and forced into the chimney started to make their rounds. After the discovery of Josh's body, several calls started coming into the police department and even the coroner's office suggesting leads and naming suspects that had bragged about killing Josh. There was one main suspect, although his name was never released. Supposedly, this guy is now spending time in a Texas jail and had previously served time in Seattle and Portland prisons with a long list of violent criminal behavior. The tips that came through about this guy were helpful, but police were never able to place him at the crime scene. And callers couldn't really provide times and specific details connecting the suspect. The coroner, of course, spoke out about the suspect, and he said that he doubted that the man would have been able to have positioned Josh in the chimney in such a position alone, and that as far as he was concerned, this was the end of that suspect and line of thinking. I'm sorry. I won't rant about this guy the rest of the time. I'm going to try not to. just because he couldn't have done it by himself, you rule him out? Suspects can have accomplices. That is a thing. That's possible. Okay, never mind. That's ridiculous. Anyways, now what we're about to get into is probably the same suspect. Okay, it's probably this unknown suspect, but I don't have anything to confirm that. Obviously, police have not released the name of this supposed suspect. So, could be the same one, but I can't guarantee it. And speaking of that, there is just not a lot of information on this case, really, because, hey, I mean, it was ruled an accidental death and the case was closed. So, most of this information that I'm going to continue talking about is speculation. So, take the rest of this with a grain of salt. Now, in later years, it would come to light that a guy by the name of Andrew Richard Newman had been one of the last people to see Josh alive. And not only that, but someone came forward saying that Andrew had been boasting about killing Josh. Andrew had a significant past, which included attacking a police officer, disorderly drunkenness, grand theft, and battery. And he had already been in jail for stabbing a disabled man to death. Yep, you heard that right. There was another instance where he admitted to murdering a woman and placing her in a barrel somewhere in New Mexico. Josh's friends tried to have Andrew investigated by police at that time, but their claims were never taken seriously. At the time Josh's friends called the police about this information, Josh's body had not yet been discovered. So the police told the friends that Josh was likely still alive and well. Despite this, Andrew is said to have boasted about having, quote, put Josh in a hole. It's unclear whether or not police ever looked into this guy after Josh's body was found, and there is certainly no record of it if they did. Then there was a pretty damning Reddit post in 2015, and if you don't know what Reddit is, it's kind of hard to explain because I don't fully understand what it is. It's considered a social media news website and forum. This is a Google search of what is Reddit. It says this is where content is socially curated and promoted by site members. You can ask questions there and people can comment and interact. So, someone on Reddit asked, people who have known murderers, serial killers, etc., how did you react when you found out? How did it affect your life afterwards? And there was this response by someone anonymous but claiming to be good friends with Josh before he disappeared. I tried finding the original Reddit comment, but there have since been a number of Josh Maddox Reddit forums, so I was only able really to find bits and pieces of this comment mentioned online in various news articles and things like that. But the best details I could find regarding the post came from the Unresolved podcast, specifically the page on their website where I found their deep dive on Josh's case, which was very interesting. So I'll leave a link to their website in the show notes for today's episode so you can check out maybe their episode on this. Now, the comment said, I went to high school with this skinny, dorky hippie named Andy who played guitar in a band. He said, I was never good friends with him or anything, but a year or so after I graduated, one of my good friends, Josh, started hanging out with him, and then he went missing. Last I heard, Andy was telling another friend, yeah, me and Josh have been spending a lot of time together. We're planning a trip to New Mexico. Unresolved stated that the poster didn't find that to be too concerning at the time. That was until someone sent him articles about something that Andy had done in New Mexico. In the articles, it claims a man named Andrew Newman had stabbed a man to death in 2009. The poster from Reddit went on to say that it turns out that in addition to becoming a lot scarier looking, Andy had indeed headed to New Mexico, where he found himself hanging out, I'll paraphrase, with the caretaker of a disabled man, and he got invited over to that apartment. The caretaker gets in the shower at one point when Andy's over there, and when he comes back out, the disabled man is stabbed to death and Andy is gone. When Andy got arrested, he also claimed to have killed a woman in New Mexico and stuffed her body in a barrel. The cops had indeed found that woman stuffed in a barrel in New Mexico. It's a certain city, but I cannot pronounce it. I'm not going to do that to myself. I'm not going to do that to you guys. But when the cops found the woman and heard about Andy, this Andy guy had possibly done it, they already had someone in custody for it and decided to stick with the guy they had instead. Years later, the commenter continued and he said that, "I found out that the caretaker in the whole disabled man death had died in a bar fight. And without him, the cops didn't have much evidence somehow on the case against Andy. So it was ultimately dropped too. So they had a guy already, so they didn't bother with Andy. Then the caretaker dies and that leaves without an eyewitness for that case. So that case is dropped as well. And I can confirm that these are actual articles and this all lines up with what this commenter on Reddit is saying. I found articles from 2009. There's a picture of this Andrew Newman guy and it details all his involvement. So this is all facts. Now, the commenter continued and he detailed his account of how the people in Josh's circle were ignored by police. He said, "Several of us went to the cops saying, 'Yo, Josh, who went missing, was last seen with Andy, who's a murderer. Maybe you should check it out.' Despite a fair amount of pestering, nothing ever really came of it. And by nothing, I mean that the police mostly didn't even return our calls. And once accidentally canceled the bulletin on Josh because, quote, 'He's alive and well and in the next town over,' which he was not." The commenter went on to explain that he could initially understand an accidental death ruling, quote, "except for the fact that in addition to Josh having last been seen with Andy immediately before his stabbing spree, people called in to report having heard rumors that Andy was bragging about putting Josh in a hole," which I've already mentioned earlier. The Redditor went on to explain that he thought the coroner's explanation was ridiculous. I will not quote him exactly here because he uses some profanity and I do try to keep it clean, but he said, "This is just my opinion, but I don't care who you are. You don't climb headfirst into a chimney via a hole rusted through a metal grate completely naked." He continues ripping apart the coroner's findings, which I love, and the events following the discovery of Josh's body. He said, again, I'm not going to quote verbatim to keep it clean. He said, "Look, I get that they didn't find enough evidence to arrest Andy or anyone else, but these people went ahead and demolished the cabin despite all of this. Josh's body was cremated, and as far as I can tell, nobody even bothered to call Andy to ask if he knew anything. By the way, from what I hear, Andy's still out and about doing his thing when he's not in the mental hospital. It's not that I want someone to blame. I'm not trying to throw a tantrum. All I'm saying is I wish they had done their job. They should have opened an investigation to track down some leads, interview some folks who've been calling in tips for the last 7 years, and maybe check for some semen or something like that. I don't know. Don't just say accidental. Dust off your hands and call it a day." I want to give like a slow clap like that. Yes, that is my feeling exactly. And probably the rest of the world that's followed this case. He added, "For the record, my thesis isn't that Andy killed Josh. Do I suspect that? Sure, but I'm also open to other possibilities. My thesis is that the circumstances surrounding Josh's death warrant a much more thorough investigation than the one that seems to have taken place." From what I can tell, this unnamed Redditor and supposed friend of Josh's has not posted any updates. In his original comment, he mentioned maybe trying to reach out to this Andy guy again, but that he was in a mental hospital and wasn't sure if he would even be able to believe any answers he would get out of him. The Unresolved podcast said that despite this guy's statements being quoted in numerous podcasts and true crime articles, his post did not seem to spur any more interest in the case by mainstream media outlets, which is probably why we don't have that much information on this case anyways. Josh's family has never commented on whether or not they believe the rumors that Josh may have been murdered are true. In the last public interview in 2015, Josh's sister Kate told the Denver Post that we'll never really know what happened to him. It's a horror story in my mind to imagine what my brother must have gone through. It's been very awful. It's a nightmare that I wouldn't wish on anyone. On October 17, 2015, Josh's family was finally able to hold a memorial service for him at the Woodland Park Community Church. To this day, there is no record of law enforcement or the coroner's office ever trying to speak with Andrew Newman about this case. And that is the story of Josh Maddox. I honestly don't know what to make of this case. Josh seemed to be a good kid with a good head on his shoulders. Yes, he had this carefree lifestyle and wanted to make this grand adventure one day and possibly live a new life, but the only way he would have ended up in the situation he was in, the only way he would have ended up in that chimney the way that he did was, to me, if he was acting alone, would be if he was on some like crazy drugs. But everyone that knew Josh said that he never did drugs. Doesn't mean that he couldn't have maybe done them this one time, but it just would have been very out of character for him. I do think there is some possible weight to the Andrew story. Like, maybe he was involved somehow. How? I don't know. But he was certainly somebody that's capable of murder. So who's to say he didn't do this to Josh? But either way, I am with his unnamed friend on Reddit. Regardless of what really happened to him, his case should have been handled better. The witnesses that called into the police station talking about someone who had bragged about killing Josh, they should have been taken more seriously. This Andrew guy should have been taken more seriously. Just because his death was ruled accidental initially doesn't mean the case shouldn't have been looked into further when they started getting all these calls. Josh's family deserved much better than that, and Josh himself deserved so much better. As always, I want to know your thoughts on today's episode, so be sure to head over to the podcast Instagram or Facebook page and let me know your thoughts on what you really think happened to Josh. Then be sure to like and follow the podcast on our socials and make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening and consider giving a 5-star review while you're at it. It helps people find the show and it also just lets me know that you like what you're hearing. But that'll do it for me this week, guys. I'll be back here in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. Until then, stay safe. Bye.